the first chapter of the letter to the Galatians, Paul says that Judaism calls him to be a killer. So since he's claiming that Judaism made him a killer and that he was presently a killer as a result of Judaism, I thought it might be useful to look at other confessions regarding his affinity for Judaism. Now, Judaism does not make one a killer. It's going to typically make one a pacifist. It is not going to cause somebody to be godly. They're going to be rabbinic, not godly. It is a religion that is was conceived by power-hungry men. It's based upon their Talmud or their traditions, their forefathers' traditions, and it's not Torah-based. So here's Paul now in Acts 22:3. So, you know, we're well into the book of Acts, and it's being chronicled by his attaché, Luke. And he's telling a Jewish audience in Hebrew. He says, I am a Jewish man, having been born in Tarsus of Cilicia. But then and now, having been reared, nourished, and educated in this city alongside the feet of Gamaliel. Now, Gamaliel was the foremost rabbinic scholar or teacher of the day. While there are copious records of those he taught, what he taught, what he wrote. And there is no mention of Shaul, as he was known at the time, as one of his students. Now, there's no reason to think that Paul is telling the truth here. But he is claiming that he was nourished, educated, and reared in this city. And this city now would be Jerusalem, by the foremost rabbinical scholar. Now, we need to keep in mind here, Yosha saved his most vicious condemnations for the rabbis, particularly the Pharisees, and Gamaliel was a Pharisee. He called them a brood of vipers, which means they are the descendants of serpents, means they're demon-possessed. It says they were complete hypocrites, frauds. Say one thing, do another. He exposed them and condemned them constantly during the 3 years of his mission. And here's Paul bragging that he was the student of the most famous of those Yosha openly condemned. Now, well, that puts Paul on the wrong side in terms of the God versus man debate, and should have been enough to condemn Paul for all time. It actually puts Paul in a very bad position relative to a prophecy of Yahweh. Yahweh said that Shaul would manifest himself addressing Gentiles arrogantly with the circular reasoning and become the plague of death during the time of the Moed. And Paul is now putting himself in Jerusalem as Yahusha was fulfilling the Moed by identifying himself with Gamaliel. So he is saying, yeah, I'm there. I'm the person that God was speaking of, calling the plague of death, because I was actually right where he said I would be. But this gets worse. having been educated and trained with regards to the most perfect and strictest conformity to, being absolute accurate and exacting accord with, the forefathers. Appointment which was received, a zealous enthusiast adherent, present and existing of God, according to the same proportion and degree as all of you. Acts 22:3. So he's not only claiming that he was taught by the foremost scholar of rabbinic Judaism, the very man that Yosha condemned. And now he's praising him, really. He's not only saying that he was there when Yosha was there in Jerusalem, but didn't pay any attention to Yosha, preferred Yosha's enemy, Gamaliel, instead. But he's also saying that he lived in strict conformity to, with an absolute exacting and accurate accord with, the religion of the forefathers. That's rabbinic Judaism. That's pharisaic Judaism. That's the religion that Yahweh and Yahusha are the most adamant against. But it gets worse. It refers to this repulsive religion, saying that he was a zealous enthusiast and adherent, present and existing, identical to, belonging to, found at the hand of God, according to the same proportion and degree as all of you. Now, he's doing two things here. One is he's claiming that rabbinic Judaism, which Yahweh throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms assails and condemns, and Yosha makes public enemy number one, is of God, when God said exactly the opposite, that it's anti-God. But he's also pretending to be one and the same of the very people that he's abusing, that he's attacking, that he will speak out against, which makes him a complete hypocrite. You know, Paul, in another one of his letters, claimed that to the Gentile, he pretended to be a Gentile. To the Jew, he pretended to be a Jew. To the Torah observant, he pretended to be Torah observant. To those who were not Torah observant, he wasn't Torah observant. All to gain an advantage over his audience. That's a hypocrite. That's a charlatan. That is a con man. You know, if you're going to be an effective con man, and you always try to appear legitimate to fool your unsuspecting prey. That's what Paul was. That's what he's admitting here. Everything in this, from beginning to end, screams, do not trust this man. This man is untrustworthy. This man is religious. This man is a liar. This man is a hypocrite. This is a con man. That's what Acts 22:3 screams. And yet, Christians read this. They have it in their holy Bibles, in their Christian New Testament, claiming it to be the inerrant word of God. Now, this single proclamation contains several exceptionally inappropriate statements. This man who claimed to speak for the Messiah, Yahusha, wallowed in the idea of being educated and trained by a rabbi, the leader of those, Yahusha, said were born of serpents. It would have been one thing for him to admit in passing that he had once been one of Gamaliel's students, but it's another altogether to speak of this acclaimed rabbi as if he was fulfilling the role of the set-apart spirit, providing education and enlightenment. It is obvious that Paul admired a man Yosha despised. The problem Yosha had with rabbinical traditions known as the Oral Torah or the Talmud is that it changes, corrupts, counterfeits, and conceals Yahweh's actual Torah teachings. So why did Paul call the inheritance which was received from his forefathers precisely accurate, when Yahusha said exactly the opposite? And speaking of perfect, Shaul used the perfect tense, which with reference to the training that he had received from Gamaliel, saying that while his education was complete, it had lingering effects. Therefore, we must ask, why did Paul claim to be a religious fundamentalist, to be a zealot in strict conformity with that which was parceled out by his forefathers? This question is vital, because it also suggests that Paul was either a compulsive liar who cannot be trusted, or he never converted from Judaism to the religion that he was proposing, Christianity. Not that one was better than the other. Further, based upon this statement, since Shaul claimed to be in absolute accord with Judaism and its oral traditions, the argument cannot be made that he was assailing the Talmud instead of the Torah throughout his letters. And that's the big argument that the Hebrew Roots movement and Messianic Jews and so many lost souls make. And the Hebrew Roots movement essentially combine Rabbinic Judaism and Pauline Christianity. And then they claim that Paul was assailing the Talmud and not the Torah. But if he's assailing the Talmud, why would you embrace Rabbinic Judaism? And if he was assailing the Talmud, then why did he just call the Talmud, the oral laws of the forefathers, precise and accurate? Why did he say that he was zealous in his pursuit of such things? Why, when he refers to the Torah, does he not refer, you know, when he's referring to the enemy, which he claims routinely is the Torah, why doesn't he use this terminology of the legacy of the traditions of the forefathers? But he doesn't. He uses the word in Greek, nomos, that is used throughout the Septuagint to translate Torah, for the book that he is assailing, for the book that he says enslaves, that cannot save. He never once assails, negatively speaks against the Talmud. Paul will twice attest, once already in our review of his letter, and he will again, claim that he had not been taught by men. And yet now, when it suits him to gain credibility with men, he tells his audience that he received training from the most acclaimed religious men of his day. So we must ask ourselves, was he lying when he told us that he had not been taught by men? Or was he lying when he claimed to have been taught by men? I mean, you've got, those are your two options. Of which was he lying? This is one of the few times Paul specifically identifies whether it was Yahweh's Torah that he was addressing or the religious traditions of the Jews. When he uses nomos, which is used throughout the Septuagint every time that Torah needs to be translated, he's always assailing the book, calling the Torah mean-spirited, antiquated, incapable of saving, enslaving. Of the flesh. And now that he's speaking of the traditions of the forefathers, which would be the Talmud, the rabbinic law, the oral law, he's praising it, precisely accurate. Of those idiots that try to exonerate Paul by saying that his arguments against the nomos are against Jewish traditions, you really ought to think. You ought to read this and realize that is not the case. Exactly the opposite is true. He's praising Jewish religious traditions, not assailing them. And when it comes to the Torah, he's assailing it, not praising it. He loves the words of men, hates the words of God. You know, this is one of the few times where he identifies the traditions of his forefathers, the basis of the Jewish religion. And he speaks favorably of the text. For those who know and love Yahweh, this juxtaposition is sufficient to demean and discount everything that Shaul wrote and said, because it's the antithesis of Yahweh's position on these things. Reinforcing this reality by placing Nomu amongst qualifiers such as the teaching of the Jewish religious scholar Gamaliel, rabbinical training, conformity, being a fundamentalist, adhering to the traditions of the forefathers, and being a zealous enthusiast, the Torah Shaul was declaring his loyalty to had to be rabbinic, and thus could not have been Yahweh's Torah. So when we are finally given some clarity, the picture being presented is the antithesis of the one painted by God. Set in the context of his overt animosity for Yahweh's word, this is especially appalling. It's becoming apparent through his testimony that Paul loved the religious law Yahweh and Yahusha despised, and he hated the Torah Yahweh and Yahusha loved. And perhaps that was why he so seldom differentiates between them in Galatians. If he had made this allegiance, or he had made his allegiance this obvious in his initial letters, his message would have been summarily rejected by all those who actually knew Yahusha. In this regard, it should be noted that of the 219 times the Hebrew word Torah, meaning teaching, direction, guidance, and instruction, is found as a proper noun in Yahweh's word, in the Greek Septuagint translation of it, Torah was rendered nomos every time, meaning an allocation of an inheritance which is partialed out. Each and every time, folks. Recognizing, therefore, the enormity of the Septuagint's influence on the Greek text which comprised the so-called Christian New Testament, a statement including nomos must reference unequivocal modifiers such as are evident here in Acts, to render nomos as anything other than Torah. So throughout this book, unless the context dictates otherwise, we will continue to default to Torah when nomos is found in the Greek text. There is no other informed or rational option. Addressing Shaul's concluding comment, present and existing, which is equivalent or identical to, belonging to, and found at the hand of God. While religious doctrines such as Judaism, while religious leaders such as Gamaliel, and while religious traditions and customs such as those manifest in the oral traditions now found in the Talmud seek to nourish a zealousness for God, God isn't Yahweh. The religious God is a false deity modeled after the men who conceived him. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. Some time ago, I suggested that Shaul became Paulos and sought the acclaim of Gentiles largely because his own people refused to believe him. Already prone to anger, he became enraged. So, should you want additional proof that Shaul despised Yahusha's chosen people, the Israelites, consider these impassioned words from his second letter, where he rails against his race for doing what he himself had admitted doing. He said, "You suffered, and under your own countrymen, just as also themselves under the Jews, the ones having killed the Lord Iusun and the prophets, and having pursued and persecuted us, not pleasing God, and hostile adversaries against all men, hindering us as we speak to the races, that they might be delivered. For they are filled to capacity with contentious and eternal sins. So upon them is a furious and indignation and wrathful judgment until the end of time." 1 Thessalonians 2:14-16. So here he's telling people, yeah, you're suffering because of the Jews. That's what Muslims tell their fellow Muslims. You're suffering because of the Jews. That's what conspiracy theorists tell one another. You're suffering because of the Jews. That's what Nazis and Hitler's group told Germans. You're suffering because of the Jews. Those Jews, they're corrupt. They're adversaries against all men. It's the same story in Christianity as delineated by Paul, as it is in Islam, as it is in communism and fascism. You suffered under your own countrymen, under the Jews, the ones that have killed the Lord Iusun. First of all, he wasn't the Lord. And second, the Jews didn't kill him. The Romans killed him. I mean, this myth that the Jews were Jesus killers is just stupid. I mean, it doesn't even have the Jews killing him in the Christian New Testament. And it's impossible. They had absolutely no authority over capital punishment. They didn't. They couldn't. It's one of many lies, the basis of Christianity, another lie promoted by none other than Paul himself. The Jews, the ones having killed the Lord Iusun and the prophets and having pursued and persecuted us, not pleasing God and hostile adversaries against all men. So Paul is calling Jews adversaries and hostile apostles against all men. The Jews are the enemy of mankind, according to Paul. They're the chosen people, according to Yahweh. Hindering us as we speak to the races. I want to tell you, Jews, religious Jews, couldn't give a hoot what anyone said to Gentiles. I don't care. Paul could have preached that God was a furry, cute little bunny rabbit with long, fluffy ears and a white tail. And the religious Jews wouldn't have given a hoot. Wouldn't have cared. You want to go off and tell the Galatians, the Thessalonians, the Corinthians, the Ephesians, that your God is a God of faith and not of knowledge, that your God is a God of grace, the cute little naked girls, not of mercy, that your God is anti-Torah. You want to go off and do that? That your God opposes circumcision, the sign of the covenant, that there are two covenants? Religious Jews couldn't have cared less. They didn't have a policing force. They didn't have a military. All Jews really cared about is how the Romans were oppressing them at this point. Their enemy was Rome. They cared about the Roman treatment of Jews. They went to two wars against Rome for Rome's abuse of Jews in Judea. Outside of Judea, they didn't care. Paul's lying. He's artificially creating an enemy. The exact same way that the Quran positions Jews as the enemy. And when in fact, Islam is the enemy of Jews rather than the other way around. And the Quran even states the same thing, that Jews are the enemy of God. So Christianity and Islam share a hatred and a inverted presentation of the chosen people. Now, what spirit out there would inspire these two religions, Islam and Christianity, both to lie about Yahweh's chosen people and to call Yahweh's chosen people, God's chosen people, their enemy? There's only one spirit that would do that. When Paul wrote this in 1 Thessalonians, anybody with an open mind anybody that wasn't already anti-Semitic and racist would have immediately recognized that Paul was speaking on behalf of Satan. He says, not only are the Jews the enemy, the adversaries of all men, hindering all men as we speak, for they are filled to capacity with contentiousness and eternal sins. So upon them is a furious indignation and a wrathful judgment to the end of time. That's why the church fathers, the leaders in Roman Catholicism, as Roman Catholicism gained power in the 4th century during the rise of Constantine, were so anti-Semitic. They hunted down and killed Jews. They burned their homes. They burned their synagogues. They stole their property. And they did so based upon 1 Thessalonians. That's how they justified it. If this unbridled and unjustified religious rant doesn't bother you, you can't be bothered. And if what Paul just said about Jews here is not irritating to you, if it doesn't make your blood boil, then there's no reason for you to listen anymore. Turn off this program. Whoever gave it to you wasted their time. You are way too far gone to have the truth ever resonate. You're part of the problem, not part of the solution. You'll never be part of God's family. If you condone not only hating Jews, but calling Jews the adversaries of all men, if you're of the view that Jews have eternal sins that will be judged with wrath until the end of time, your view of the chosen people is the opposite of God's. God says he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and with Yahudah. Yahweh has made all sorts of promises to them that he's going to honor. Yahweh loves them. So if your view is like Paul's, your view is the opposite of God's. If your position is the opposite of God's, you are never going to be allowed into his covenant. You will never be allowed into his home. You will never see heaven. And just give up. If you're among the many Christians or the many Muslims who believes what Paul just wrote in 1 Thessalonians is an accurate assessment of Israelites, of Jews, of Yahudim, of the chosen people, go away. Nothing God will ever say will ever resonate with you. You're prone to believe men. And your views have been beguiled to the point that they are the antithesis of God's. Go away. I can't help you. God can't help you. No one can help you. Yahweh has not and will not permanently disinherit his chosen people. Almost all of the unfulfilled prophecies in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms speak of Yahweh reengaging, reconciling his relationship with his chosen people. This, therefore, has the adversary's fingerprints all over it. But at the very least, consider this. Was Shaul himself not a Jew? Is he, therefore, not calling himself an adversary against all men? Is he not admitting that he had eternal sins? That he would be judged until the end of time? Returning to Galatians 1:14, now the verse that led us to this consideration, the Nestle-Allens interlinear conveyed Paul's arrogance thusly. I was progressing in Judaism beyond many contemporaries in the kind of me more exceedingly zealous existing of the fathers of me traditions. I know I didn't read very well. And it's partly word order, but it's mostly Paul didn't write very well. So it isn't that the King James is wrong here, albeit it is poorly worded, but that it is inadequate saying and profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals and my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous of the traditions of my fathers. Jerome did the passage justice, however. In the Latin Vulgate, he wrote, "And I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my equals among my own kind, having proven to be more abundant in zeal towards the traditions of my fathers." Under Philip Comfort's guidance, the New Living Translation suggested, "I was far ahead of my fellow Jews in my zeal for the traditions of my ancestors." It is as if the authors of the New Living Translations felt compelled to change even the simplest messages. The term Iudaismos describes Judaism, the practice of the Jewish religion. It isn't the Greek word for Jew. Judaism is a religion. Jews are a race. There is a gargantuan difference. But the New Living Translation didn't seem to care. They were writing a novel, not translating testimony. Paul's next statement is also untrue. Feeding the myth of predestination and the mythos which became Calvinism. And speaking of mistakes, you should know that the independent clause depicted within the brackets, which I will highlight, isn't included in Papyrus 46, the oldest witness of this letter. It reads, "But at the point in time, it pleased for God, the one having appointed me, setting me aside out of the womb of my mother," and then in brackets, "and having summoned me by name on account of his grace," into brackets, comma, "to reveal and disclose the Son of him in order that I could announce the healing message and beneficial messenger among the races and nations. Immediately, I did not ask the advice of or consult with flesh or blood." Period. End of quote. Galatians 1:15 and 16. All right. So here is Yahweh announcing through his actual prophets, one of which he says he anointed, he appointed, and actually didn't appoint, because God doesn't appoint. He knew in the womb. Now, Paul's saying that, oh man, you know, I was appointed in the womb, man. I was set aside in the womb. I'm just like the Messiah, man. Yeah, man. God put me in that womb. No. It's Jeremiah that Yahweh says, listen, Jeremiah was asked to share what Yahweh had to say with the children of Israel. And Jeremiah said, come on, I'm way too young. And there's lots of people more qualified than I am. And Yahweh said, listen, I've known you since you were in the womb. Now, the big difference saying I've known you and I appointed you. Big difference saying that, yeah, I exist through all time. Therefore, you know, I may be new to you, but you're not new to me. But Jeremiah still had free will. He could say, I want to do this. I don't want to do it. Moshe, for example, the one who inscribed the Torah, he was never said, I knew you back in the womb. And he wasn't appointed. He was asked. Paul is trying to claim credibility for himself that God did not give him. And he's doing so in a way that anyone who knows God says, nah, didn't happen that way. Now, it's also interesting that he said it pleased God to have appointed me, set me aside from the womb of my mother, to reveal and disclose the Son of him, in order that I could announce the healing and beneficial messenger among the races immediately. So what in the world was Yahusha doing with the disciples? Why did he bother? I mean, if immediately conveying the nature of the Son was God's desire, why did he speak of the Son through the prophets? Why is the most elaborate, most accurate, most comprehensive presentation of what the Son did on Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuot told in the Psalms written by Dode 1,000 years before they occurred, and then proclaimed by Yeshayah 700 years before they occurred. If God wanted it announced immediately, why did he bother telling the story of exactly what he was going to say and do 1,000 years before he said and did any of it? And then why the son was here, Yahusha, why did he bother? Not only to pick the 12, but to train the 12, to teach the 12, to share his spirit with the 12. Paul's claim is ludicrous. If you are even half-witted, if you got 1% of your brain operating, you got to know this is a presumptuous, egotistical lie with absolutely no basis in truth. Moreover, if the purpose of this man, unlike those that Yahusha chose, was to present the son, why didn't he ever quote him? They did. He didn't. He doesn't quote him one time accurately. There's once that he attempts to quote him and he misquotes him. And there's no other time he even makes the attempt. He did not present the son. Every bit of this is a lie. And if you're thinking, you'll recognize it and walk away from this horrible, demon-possessed, insane personality, the most infamous and destructive personality in the history of the world, Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament. We'll be back with you at this time tomorrow. May God bless.